This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. I'm always really pleased to have you here, and I'm very pleased to have a fantastic guest tonight. His name is Jason Elias. He is, I like to say, wellness practitioner. He is involved in integral health medicine, or I'd like to say alternative health medicine, because I personally believe in that. And these days, with what's going on the planet globally, most people are thinking very seriously about their health. I imagine that most of the people listening have noticed that people are starting to turn the corner from, I'd say, traditional, which I say that lightly, I'll say RX medicine, to a more holistic and natural approach. But Jason Elias has been doing this for many years. So Jason, welcome to the show. I know that my audience is anxiously waiting to hear what you have to say.
Absolutely. It's great to be here. I mean, I love to sing natural medicine to whoever will listen, because you know, basically, Western medicine is symptom-oriented. It treats the symptom, but it forgets the person that's being treated. And, you know, complementary medicine really supports the body's ability to heal itself. And it does that both physically through herbs, energy work, and it also does it psychically, because most of your healing comes from your mind. So what you believe, you become. So I love placebo in a positive sense.
So you're saying that most of healing comes from your mind, and I actually agree with you on that, but I've had a really hard time articulating to my peers. Maybe you could explain that to them, because I think it's so extremely important to understand that about who we are and how we heal.
My last book was The Seven Graces of Ageless Aging. It's really seven graces about how to be vibrant and healthy as long as you live, every moment. The first grace is to rewrite the script. And it's really based on, we have these scripts that we buy from our parents, our preachers, our school teachers, our family, you know, whoever grew up told us and modeled for us what health was and what decline was. And if we can rewrite that, I mean, if we think positively, going back every day in every way, I'm getting better and better, you know, but the truth is the mind creates matter. It's just a more refined concept of it. And, you know, studies have been around from time immemorial that really, and especially studies now, that show the power of what we call placebo. But it seems like it's only placebo feels like it puts it down. But placebo means that we create the reality through our intention, through the mind, through reframing what health is and who we are. So it's a very powerful tool.
So, and I know there's a term that I've heard and many people have heard that's called the placebo effect.
You know, 30 to 40% of, you know, healing is placebo, they say. It's because people think it's going to help them. So my God, that's as powerful as almost any drug. So if you believe in it, the placebo effect supports us and will help get us better. There's study after study about people taking a sugar pill instead of the real medicine and getting the same results. There's stories about operations where someone was told they just have a little incision and they were told that, you know, something was removed and they get better. These studies are there. There are books written about it. But there's also something called the nocebo effect.
Nocebo.
That means if you believe something is going to harm you, there's a good chance it will. You know, I have the research in my book, you know, someone that I trained with works at Harvard and he's the head of studies in placebo, the power of the mind to heal. So they've done all these studies that are really very, I mean, it's Harvard Medical, you know, so it's very controlled. But, you know, people that look at it and say, my God, this stuff really works. When we heal ourselves, we can do it through herbs, through good diet, through good intention. But we have to reframe the mind that this is going to help me. If you feel what you're doing is useless, most likely it will be, because the mind can support something or it can interfere with it.
The mind is very powerful. What do you think about when people speak things on themselves? This is a thing I've been seeing and hearing recently with just, you know, some people that I have association with, and they tend to, some of them tend to speak things on themselves either positively or negatively. I always say the spoken word is so powerful because I believe that, and I'm going to ask you what you think of this, that the cells hear everything that you're saying.
I agree with you 100%. What we say to ourselves, you know, it's like placebo or nocebo. It's vibrational. So the cells get the vibration. When people play really beautiful music to plants, the plants grow better. If they, play very discordant, loud, music to plants, the plants wilt. The cells of the plant respond vibrationally to the energy around them. You know, so the words we say are an energy. They create a vibration and it affects us on a cellular level.
How do you help people in your practice? Because you said that you're also a psychologist, you know, and I imagine that you're an excellent psychologist. So how do you integrate this kind of thinking to help your clientele?
I was originally a psychologist. Mm-hmm. I can give you my biography in a nutshell, I hope. I don't want to go too long. But, you know, I was studying psychology. I was a psychotherapist. I went, now this is the late 60s, so it really ages me, to a place in Big Sur, California called Esalen to train in something called Gestalt therapy. When I was there in training, we had body work done. And while they were working on our bodies to release muscular patterns, feelings would come up. When they worked in the back of my legs, I would feel anger and they say, let it out. And I go, argh. And when they worked on my jaw, I would feel tears and they said, let it out. And tears would come. And we hold our emotions in our body. So I wanted to learn to work with the body to free the emotions to be a better psychotherapist. And as I went on, I trained in body work. I've studied something called the Alexander Technique. I have a license in massage therapy. I don't do it to learn how to use the body and how to augment those memories. And then I found acupuncture. And that was a unifying metaphor because with acupuncture, we look not at the mind or the body or the spirit, but at the being, which encompasses all of them. You can't really separate mind, body, and spirit. It's one. And if you work on the body, it'll affect the spirit and the mind. If you work on the mind with positive thinking and reframing, it will affect the body and the spirit. And if you work on meditation and spirituality and mindfulness, it affects. So what happened was my vehicle became acupuncture and herbs. But, you know, I create metaphor. When someone's on my table, you know, I'll give them ideas of how to think about healing. You know, I'll use the points and say, this point is called Gate of Hope. And when I needle this point, think of, you know, that we're igniting that hope. Hope is alive. If there's hope, there's movement. So I try to connect on all those levels and we find out which door is open, because no matter which door you can enter, whether it's the body, mind, or the spirit, if that's your entry point, it'll affect the whole person.
Now, I heard you say a couple of things, and I'm going to mention one that I haven't heard this about this particular discipline for healing and exercise recently, the Alexander Technique, which was one of these things. I remember it. I was a young girl, and I used to try to do the poses, but I didn't understand what I was doing, the Alexander Technique.
It's a three-year training. It was really involved, you know, 5 days a week, 4 hours a day. But I loved it. So we used to teach at Juilliard. It was a required course.
Wow.
For all Juilliard students, whether they were musicians, dancers, actors, because it's use of the body, is how we use our bodies and how we hold our bodies in certain ways. So it really lent itself to that path that I was on to learn how to free the body of its old habitual patterns. And that's why Juilliard uses it. Most people in the arts have heard of Alexander. Very few people have heard of it outside of the arts.
So how does it affect a musician?
Well, you look at how the person connects to their instrument. In other words, how do you play? If you have a guitar, you know, I had a violinist who came whose neck was fused to their shoulder almost, because for all those hours of doing violin with the violin held in that position, you know, he played for the Philharmonic, but it like froze. And he came to me for this pain. He was still playing. And slowly, by and by, we release the musculature. But then we try to change the habit, because every time he even thought of playing the violin, he would lift his left shoulder, he would scrunch his right, his neck would compress. And what we taught him was to undo the old habits. You know, Alexander is about being in the moment. When you get into the old habits, even habits of sitting and standing, we get locked into these old ways of doing things that very often are ineffective. And at the worst, they actually create more damage to the body. So the first thing you need to do is to bring it to consciousness that you do that, and then find something to substitute it with. You know, and that's hard to describe, because Alexander found a way to connect someone to their vital energy. So when you feel that energy moving through you, it feels so good that it feels bad to close it off again. You know, but you can't explain that on the phone, obviously.
I'm getting the gist of it, I will say.
Yeah, and you're a musician, you're an artist, you know, you relate to your body being your vehicle. It's through this body that you manifest so many forms of your art and your life.
Yeah, I think if people thought of their body and their being as an instrument, and you can kind of relate to all of these other different, I'd say, vernaculars of delivering what you want to deliver, whatever that might be. But I'm very impressed with it. So it seems that you've taken all of these different things that you've engaged in and learned very well, and you've integrated it, and you've come up with a list of seven. How did that happen?
Yeah, this is my sixth book. You know, so I've been writing, but I've never felt, believe it or not, like an author. So my first three books were major publishers. You know, one was geared to women, one was geared to immunity, and, you know, Random House, Werner Books. But when they asked me to go and, you know, sell the book, I said, well, I'm not really an author. I'm a practitioner. I'm a healer. And I realized I was sabotaging myself because of my own discomfort with putting myself out there. So with this book, I really feel I've graduated to author. And I feel I want to share inspiration, because I think that's what this book manifests. And I can share this with many more people than I can do in small groups or in my office. And I feel ready to put this out and help people ignite to their passion, to their life force. And I think it's about how to live every day more fully. You know, hopefully you live longer too.
Yes, that'd be a good thing if you can live longer and live happy. So the title of the book is The Seven Graces of Aging, of Ageless Aging. The Seven Graces of Ageless Aging. And the subtitle is How to Die Younger at a Later Age.
How to Die Young as Late in Life as Possible. You know, it's like to stay, you know, to die young means to be young, to never give up on your youth and on your vibrancy and on your joy. One of my other books, I love the title because it came from William Blake, and it was called Kissing Joy as It Flies. And it comes from a William Blake.
I think I read that book.
Did you? Yeah, and that's the autobiography one. And that was the one that we were going to do the podcast
yes,
on.
Yes, the other podcast, yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like he who binds to himself a joy does the winged life destroy, but he who kisses joy as it flies lives in eternity sunrise. And I love that.
It's a beautiful image in my mind. The image of it is there.
It's just in the moment we can tap joy. You can't hold it. As soon as you try to hold it, it pollutes. So we need to learn to let go of the past and to let go of expectations and to be present.
I agree with you on that. And it's funny, I observed throughout my life that many people, many times, tend to hold on to things that they should have let go of a long time ago. And it does affect their health. I've seen it.
You've also done it. I read a little bit on your biography of what you've dealt and what you've let go of to open up to the light that you're experiencing. And yes, you've got to let go of the past. You've got to let go of hurts, resentments, and patterns that keep us stuck.
I believe, and I'm sure that I imagine that in your passion, in your practice, that you deal with a lot of people that have blockages because of things in their way past.
Of course.
It must be really difficult or challenging, I'll say, to get people to release it, just, you know, let it go. Like there's that song from that movie Frozen that all the little kids have, like, and it's embedded in their subconscious. I think about that because I noticed that when that song had become popular, all the little kids would be walking down the street singing it, let it go, let it go, let it go. And they just sing it like crazy. And I'm wondering if, I believe that's a positive thing because that's the song that's embedded in their subconscious at a very young age. I wish everybody else could have that joy.
Me too. And that Don't Worry, Be Happy song, you know, which came, that was, he studied with Nayar Baba, who that was his logo. You know, so don't worry, be happy. You know, it's like, don't hang on to it. You know, it's like, be happy now. It's not later. It's not then and there. It's, hey, it's here.
For many people, I imagine in your practice, a lot of your practice deals with people having to release things from the past. And I look at your background and I see it's so diverse. I see that you went to the new school, and in one bio of yours, I saw you called it what it was originally called, the New School for Social Research.
Yes.
That's what we have in common. And I think we went there the same year, but I was just a little girl. You know, I got a little girl's scholarship to go to that school, and I never really understood why. I hadn't even finished high school yet, but that school is very special. Explain to me about your educational journey. I think that people like to know that.
I went to the graduate school there, and it was originally called University in Exile. During World War II, a lot of the leading minds of Europe, you know, had to leave because of the Holocaust and the Third Reich and, you know, the whole, and they came to America and they started a University in Exile, which turned out to be the New School.
See, that I did not know.
Yeah, and that's how it began. And then it became a very kind of liberal, open school, and it taught the community, it taught arts. But the graduate school, which was mostly psychology, sociology, and political science, and that's why it was the New School of Social Research, offered PhDs in these areas. You know, so I went there, I got my master's there, I did all my PhD credits. But I never finished with the dissertation because I went to this other school, you know, but this would take forever to tell the story of. It's in the biography. But most of my learning came, I traveled around the world for over a year studying healing in different cultures. And that was Kissing Joy, followed that path. And it was, you know, what do they do in Japan, in India, in the Philippines? And I worked with healers all over the world and realized we were talking the same stuff. It was really about energy. It was about what we're talking about more pragmatically now. But it was an exciting. So that was my main learning. And, you know, the New School was wonderful. And then the Alexander. So I'm still a student. I think to maintain your joy, you need to continually learn. And the more I learn, the more I realize there is to learn.
You are a lifelong learner.
I am, and I love it.
It's interesting. I'm just very intrigued by it because when I read that, I said, I was like in the 10th grade and I went to graduate school. You were getting credit for it, but for some reason they sent me there one summer, you know, and it was a graduate school. And I felt like I'm here with all these like older people in their 20s. And it's interesting that you said that it was a very liberal kind of educational vernacular in which they taught, because I went there for film.
You must have, you know, excelled in what you were doing for that invitation to be allotted to you. They were quite innovative and they were looking to help to bring out talent in people. So I think that's a great opportunity that you have.
Well, it was. I didn't really know why I was there, but I did receive the learning, I'll say. I went to a very liberal and very outstanding school system. I was very fortunate to go there, you know, and I realized that not everybody had that advantage. It just was the luck of the draw that I was in that school system. And I'm grateful for it to this day. I really am, because I would not be the woman I am today not having gone to Mamaroneck school system. But getting back to you, I think that looking at your background, I'm really fascinated and amazed at how you were able to bring everything together to do good for others. You're helping people, because it seems that even though you do all of these things, you seem to, from what I've said and the things I've read about you, you think outside of yourself.
That to me is the connection. It's like, you know, one of the graces is find your passion. And, you know, to find that which ignites you. I used to tell my son, find your passion. And he said, Dad, I found my passion. It's music. I said, that's great. Keep that and find another passion that'll pay the mortgage. And, you know, that's not me. I never thought I would say, you know, and finally, when I got over this thing, that's what plugs him in. As soon as I said, yeah, plug in. And he ignited, and music is his life, and he, in every way, you know. So for me, it was healing. It was like my great-grandmother was a healer. They called her the little doctor in Greece. And I found out when I was writing The Kissing Joy for my aunt, who knew her, about how she treated people. She treated people with herbs, and she told them teaching stories, because this was like early 1900s, before World War II. And people came from all over to be healed by her. They call, you know, it was really this amazing history that I didn't even know about. But I felt when I plugged into that healing journey, and it's really about loving, it's really about seeing people as they could be instead of who they think they are. And that's what I feel my role is as a healer, is to help people to become the tree of the seed that they think they are, but they don't see how much they can become more of themselves.
I imagine that you see that a lot of times, I'm just an observer, and I'm a practitioner in other ways, that people are almost afraid to own the part of themselves that is the core of who they are, because of, I guess, conditioning and the things that we're taught as we go along, you know, travel along this journey. We're convinced of things that might not necessarily be true. They might not be necessarily true of who we are, and they might not necessarily be the best for us. How do you deal with things like that as a healing practitioner? Because I'm amazed by anyone that will be in the field that you're in, because you take on a lot of energy of others.
I've learned early on in the practice to just let it move through. So, you know, I at the beginning, I used to pick up symptoms. But, you know, we buy these tapes that have been put on us. You're not good enough. You'll never be good enough. You're lazy. You just think about yourself. I mean, you can go on and on with these words that all of us grew up with that became part of our self-image. And we're so much more than that. But we've got to, as we said earlier in this talk, we've got to excise that. We've got to get rid of those tapes. And when you get rid of those old tapes that is so restrictive and so self-defeating, something is going to come through. And that's pure energy or love. And it'll guide people back to taking the risk and becoming who they could be. Very often we never felt like my son, I fed that tape. I said, no, love music, but you're not going to make a living doing it. And I realized how negative that input was on him. Of course you can do it. And if you have to augment by bartending or by doing, do it and love what you do. But don't sabotage that which you're meant to do. You got to plug into the current. And we know when we're plugged into the current because we feel it. You know, it's like, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, when you start doing it and you're starting to love who you are at the same time.
Amen.
Amen is right. You know, I think that there's so many people, especially during this age of COVID, you know, what has been your experience in dealing with your clientele in the past year that's been so challenging for everybody?
Yeah, I mean, my practice was very much a hands-on practice with the acupuncture. So I continued the practice for about 4 months, you know, talking to people online, but it gave me the space of going with him. People really were fragmented, but most people I know found the gift in the curse. You know, I mean, the Chinese, they chaos and opportunity are the same symbol in Chinese medicine. So the chaos is COVID. I mean, it threw us out of all our routines. Many of the people I know couldn't pay, you know, they couldn't pay the rent. I mean, it was like their life. It was horrible. And it still is. I mean, it's not that it's better. It's clearing.
It's about the barrenness and also the isolation, the lack of money and the isolation. It's a paradigm shift and everybody's situation is unique as we go through it together, which I find very thought-provoking.
It is. And you tap into that which is essential. In other words, a lot of people said, you know something, in many ways, I'm happier. You know, I'm with myself. I don't have to prove anything to anyone. You know, they're going through a terrible, you know, epidemic of anxiety now because people have to go back into the world and they kind of got comfortable not having to play the games. And then we got to go back into the world and play the games.
How does one get in touch with you? If the listeners, I have a feeling people are going to want to talk to you. How can they find you?
My website is fiveelementhealing.net.
Fiveelementhealing.net.
.net. They can Google me. You know, that brings you to all the books I've written and gives you options to get to the website or to call me. I love what I do. I love being there for my clients and friends, and that's what brings joy to my life, is working with others.
Do you specialize in any particular age group, or does it matter? You work with children and adults, elders, middle-agers, 30-somethings?
I do work with everyone, not as many children, you know, but from 20s on. My practice used to be autoimmune and women's issues. Those were two of my books. You know, one was called In the House of the Moon. You know, so I do work with anyone. Very often people will come to me with a complaint, you know, either diverticulitis or bad back or, you know, heart disease or hypoglycemia. You know, I can think of a million physical things. And while they're working with me, I try to get them to look deeper. That, yes, I want to address the symptom. I want you to get over this. And I can help you with that. I can give you herbs. I can make nutritional suggestions. I can have you try different emotional things emphasized, but how did we create this dysfunction? And hopefully in the long run, people start looking and saying, wow, I'm part of this. This didn't just happen to me. And that's my goal. A lot of people come because they want alleviation from pain or something that Western medicine couldn't help them with. And we can help. But then I try to say there's more than that. Are you open? So some aren't. You know, some we get them through the issue. And others really want to go deeper, you know. So
are you doing in-person as well as online consultation?
I am.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm unvaccinated. I do believe in vaccines. That's a big question.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people in my field have problem with the vaccine. And it's, you know, I'm not a big fan of vaccines in general. You know, I think they're overused, and I think there's a lot of bad stuff in there. But you always weigh benefits and liabilities. And for this disease, I think the benefits so far outweigh the liabilities. So I'm a big proponent of vaccines for COVID when we can get them. And I'm back to hands-on, but I do it very carefully with masks, with, you know, cleaning hands because I have to touch people. And I love getting back to touching people. It's a wonderful thing.
I want some of that too. I like to touch. No, being isolated, being single is a challenge. And there are very few people. There are some people that are single that have been fortunate enough to be able to connect with someone to have that touch because there's a strong emotional component to not being having physical contact.
It's so fundamental. I remember I lived in India for 5 years. When I came back here, I was watching on, you know, a PBS, the show on Nova called, what, you know, What Time Is Your Betty? I mean, it was this, it was a thing on Touch, actually. And there was an experiment where someone went to a library and the librarian was an actress. And they got a book and the librarian gave the same rap, but one group of people she brushed, just briefly brushed against. After this happened, the people were asked all these questions about this interaction with the librarian. Would you trust her? The people who were brushed trusted her, liked her, thought she was happy. And it was exactly the same what she said. It was just that brush. I mean, touch is so powerful, even if it's... So to be without touch, especially if you're single during this time, you know, it's difficult. You know, we need to stimulate those cells.
Well, you can make a decision to not be alone. You have to make the decision and then go forth from there. But I think that people would be really inspired to read your book, The Seven Graces. And I like the fact that you use the word grace. You know, I'm a Christian, and the word grace has a lot of meaning to me. You know, I've heard a lot of numbered books where there's seven this and the five this and the four, and they're all excellent, and they're excellent practices. But there's something about the word grace. Why did you choose the word grace?
I think, you know, I told you, like a bunch of people who were in their 80s and 90s and one over 100, many without being on any medication, and they were vibrant. And I said, what is your secret? And as I started, so that began the seed for this book. I wanted to know what their secrets were. And I found seven recurrent themes.
Oh.
One was change the script, change what you think. But I felt that these were graces that they had shared with me. It was more than something to do. It felt like something spiritual or holy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the graces are, you know, I don't have the book in front of me, so I got to remember, but it's, you know, one is rewrite the script, change the tapes we tell ourselves. You know, the second grace is find your tribe, find people who support you as you are and don't demand that you be different to be accepted in that tribe. So we have to find the people that we're comfortable with. We can recreate a family. The third grace is mindfulness, learning how to be in the moment. It's different than the first grace, because the first grace is how to use your mind by directing it. The third grace is how to be no mind, how to really just take things in, not to judge, to observe, you know, and we go into techniques to do that. The fourth grace is to find humor and to let go of stuff, to live a simple life, to let go of things we don't need and to laugh a lot and find things to laugh at. The fifth grace is to find your passion, what we spoke about before, finding that which ignites you. The sixth grace is movement, both physical, to be active, but to be moved emotionally, not to be stuck and stagnant, because that's the root of all disease. Even the word dis-ease means stagnation. Movement gets rid of stagnation. And the last grace is how to nurture your body. It's the temple to the divine. So how to feed it good food, how to breathe good air, how to maintain good relationships. Those are the seven graces, and they are graces.
Well, it sounds genuinely holistic. And I really recommend people to read the book, and I'm going to read the book as well, because It's certainly not going to hurt anybody, and it certainly feeds, it feeds the organism holistically. And, you know, I think that many people, I think during this whole time that we've been through, have been in a state of trying to discover themselves, to discover self and face yourself. This is who you are.
And I think COVID gave us that. It made us look within. You know, with older people, they're aware that there's mortality, that they may die. So how can I squeeze the juice out of every day? But more and more young people faced mortality of either themselves during COVID or their parents or loved ones. So they get that there's something more fundamental. This book gives inroads to that which is fundamental. I really do. And it's filled with teaching stories and quotes from the sages of past. You know, there's a lot of storytelling and a lot of fun in those pages. So yes, I'm pushing it, but it's good. It'll change your life.
No, it's good. You know, and I'd really like to have you back on after I read the book to discuss more specifics about it, because as you describe it, it sounds like it's a must read, and it sounds like something that you could go back and read again, even like years later, the way you're describing it. And, you know, I know that we connected this time, and basically I heard the title and I just wanted it. I wanted to know. And also knowing about your other book, I knew that it would be something that's very poignant and useful, you know, and beneficial.
Absolutely. And I'm always available to talk because I feel that I need to put this out. You know, where ears are receptive, I'll be out there. You know, because I think it can change your life. It's not the book, but the principles that are embodied in the book that have supported so many people, that if we can implement some of those in our own lives, it'll give us access to a fuller, richer, more vibrant life. It really will.
Well, the name of the book is The Seven Graces of Ageless Aging. The subtitle, I'm going to try it again, How to Die Young as Late as Possible. Is that good?
That's good.
Okay. But I think just the title itself should be, I believe it would prompt people to read it. I think there are certain generations, I'll say the baby boomers like myself, who bring their youthfulness, they bring our youth with us into old age. This would be the booster shot, okay? I'm going to say it like that. I got to read it because I'm still young.
You are. You're vital in this. Yeah.
I feel young. And sometimes I remind myself of the number, but then I sort of like put it on the wayside.
But you've tapped into many. When you read The Graces, you'll realize, you know, that you've tapped into those. But it's reappreciating them.
Reappreciate. Yes, indeed. And I can't wait to talk to you about this book again or more in depth. And then I'm sure that you'll be writing another one. Thank you so much, Jason.
Oh, no, this was great.
No, you're just love personified. I just love what you do and it's universal. And I can't wait to have you back on.
Thank you, Tony.
And I'm going to ask the audience to come back again. And I'm going to thank the audience again for coming. And definitely check out Jason Elias, his book, Seven Graces of Ageless Aging. You know you want some of that. You can't deny it. And I'll say for now, bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.